So the topic is exploring a golden rule in relationships. And some devotees have been guessing what it is. And I've been playing along, not saying what it is. One of the practical things in a relationship is, or a medium that's very important, is communication. And sometimes, or oftentimes, when things are not communicated properly, then the stresses of relationships really begin to show up. So the golden rule, there are many golden rules. A golden rule that I would like to give some attention to is something that nowadays the modern folks, the self-actualization, self-help gurus type persons, they title it as first seek to understand before seeking to be understood. So what I thought we can do is look at three pastimes. Two of the pastimes are, I guess, good examples, and one is an anti-example, highlighting the same point. So the first one is the pastime of Lord Chaitanya and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So yesterday Himanshu Prabhu asked in the evening about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya as an example. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as one of the essential aspects of his preaching, was to come to Jagannath Puri. And he came to Jagannath Puri unlike any other sannyasi would visit Jagannath Puri. First of all, he was very young, 24 years of age, and he came chanting and dancing, although initiated within a initiated by a Mayavadi sannyasi within the Saraswati line. Still, when he entered Jagannath Puri, actually it's described that he entered Jagannath Puri from this place called Atharanala. So for a long time I didn't understand what that word meant until I saw the place. Atharanala, Atharanala. Nala means like a canal or stream. And 18 of those, Athara, Nala. Oh, now it makes sense. So there's a bridge that takes one right into Jagannath Puri, and it has 18 arches, and that's called Athara Nala. And as soon as you cross that and enter the Jagannath Puri area, the first thing that you see is the chakra on top of Lord Jagannath's temple. So as soon as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw the chakra, he was in super ecstasy. And he ran in the direction of the Jagannath temple. And as soon as he ran in, he saw the forms of Lord Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra. And he couldn't hold his ecstasy and he just came in, fainted. And he actually ran towards the deities. And the gatekeepers, they did not know how to interpret this whole exhibition of ecstasy, and they tried to stop him. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fell unconscious in front of Lord Jagannath. And they thought, this is some exhibitionism. What is this? All this swooning and falling down unconscious. So they thought they should do something. They should either beat him up or throw him out. At that time, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya appeared on the scene. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was fairly elderly. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a young man. I mean, just from an age perspective. And he said, hold on, hold on. This doesn't look ordinary. And so he took a little swab of cotton, put it to his nostrils to see, and he said, oh, this shows that he is in a very deep, unconscious state. However, there are symptoms of life. So this is not ordinary. This is extraordinary. Anyway, take this young sannyasi to my house. And right behind, as when they did so, right behind Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came in Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's brother-in-law. I forget his name. Gopinath. Gopinath Acharya, thank you. And Gopinath Acharya said, did you see this young sannyasi come by? We've been looking for him. Yes, yes, he has just come by. I've taken him to my house. Oh, very good. Please tell me, who is this young sannyasi who looks very attractive? He is Sri Krishna Chaitanya. He is Krishna himself. Oh, come on, come on. What do you mean he is Krishna himself? Don't be a sentimentalist. In the age of Kali, there is no incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He said to be Triyuga. So there's a whole conversation between Gopinath Acharya and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. No, no, read the scriptures. It is described in the Mahabharata, it is described in so many other places, and he gives all these scriptural evidences. And someone just says, come on, come on. You cannot be called God. So when he went home, you saw this young sannyasi, you know, being brought back to consciousness by his associates by chanting Krishna's name. And so, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya thought, how can I help this young man? I need to teach him Vedanta. Because by the power of Vedanta, he will be able to maintain his sannyas. A very good looking man. And very good looking sannyasi or brahmachari means it might not be very healthy for his renunciation. So I need to teach him Vedanta, because by proper understanding of Vedanta he can discriminate and he can protect himself. So he invited Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and said, I would like to teach you Vedanta. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not disagree. So for the next 7 days, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya spoke. And he spoke, and he spoke, and he spoke. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sat, like some of you are sitting, like expressionless. No, they didn't bat their eyelids. They didn't nod in agreement. They didn't shake their head in disagreement. Just sad. And interestingly, oh yeah, I was going to say that word when Dhanakili Mataji was saying something. I forget the punchline, I thought of it then. Something, we need to have time for spacing out, like the other day we were in a meeting and we said we need to have in our day as part of our schedule sadhana, studying, breakfast, spacing out. it's part of our daily routine. We have to space out. Or like she was saying, one thing, there's services. There's space out is also one. So he didn't space out, but he just didn't respond. And interestingly, you know, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya also didn't really stop and pause for, you know, after half an hour or 1 hour. He went on for 7 days. Have you ever come across people who keep on talking and talking without noticing all this, what you're saying to them? Like, hey. Keep on talking. Somehow Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya kept on talking for 7 days. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Anyway, it's believable because it's in scripture, but it's unbelievable. It's 7 days. And then after 7 days, he paused and he asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "Are you understanding what I am saying? Is there something that's not clear? Because you haven't said anything. You're not agreeing, you're not disagreeing. You're not understanding what I am saying." And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then gave an answer. He said, "What you're speaking, it's not that I'm not understanding. And also the absolute truth is very easy to understand. Except by your explanations, you're casting a cloud in front of the bright sun. So by your explanations, you're actually making the truth more obscure." And for Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, that was like a massive blow. Because he was the Mahapandit. He had many, many sannyasis as his students. And for such a learned person to be told that your knowledge is obscuring the truth, there cannot be something more, something that he feels completely taken aback by. He was shocked. So how, what do you mean? No one has ever said that. So many people come. In fact, he was the scholar for Nyaya in all of the land. And he had such impeccable understanding of logic that there was no other person who could defeat him. And to him, a young man, young sannyasi, tells him, "The truth by itself is very clear. You're obscuring it. By your explanation, you're confusing the truth." So he asked him, "Can you explain yourself?" So there's a very beautiful exchange. There's a discussion on what's called the Atmarama verse. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him, "Can you explain the Atmarama verse?" So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, as a scholar, gave 11 different types of explanations to that verse. And then he invited Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "Can you explain this verse?" And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained it in 64 ways, not touching on the 11 that he had already explained. And that was it. It was too much to handle. So one of the teachings, there are many teachings from this pastime. One of the teachings is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya the full opportunity to be first understood. Or look at it from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's side. He first tried to understand Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya before directly coming to his house and saying, "I know you're a scholar, but you really obscure the truth. I will tell you something." Besides, it's also about how to interact with scholars who are very... But we will not touch those lessons today. For 7 days, he just kept quiet and gave Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya the full opportunity to explain himself. And we know from that, their friendship actually, that's the transformation moment for Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. We'll shift gears now. We'll go to Srimad Bhagavad Gita. The first chapter of Bhagavad Gita is observing the army. Lord Shri Krishna is seated on this wonderful chariot that has five white horses. The chariot that has been gifted by Agni himself. Seated is on the chariot is with him is Arjuna, and on the chariot is a flag with Hanuman on the flag, and all these two massive armies, brothers or cousins, are having a face-off. And it is one of the most poignant times in the Pandu or the Kaurava history. Because for the Pandavas, they have come out of an exile, a very, very difficult period of 13 years. And on the other side, the stakes are very high, because Duryodhana is there with all the great Kaurava generals, and it is his time to claim his ownership on the kingdom, because that's what he's the incumbent, he's defending it. And Arjuna, with all of his chivalrous spirit as a Kshatriya, asks Krishna, Senayor Ubhayor Madhye Ratham Sthapayame Achyuta. Take my chariot to the middle of the two armies. I would like to see who has come to fight with me. And Krishna draws the chariot, and Arjuna scans the Kaurava army. Massive army. So huge that it seems they spanned 12 miles. All the way. In fact, they had formed themselves like that later in the war when Jayadratha had challenged Arjuna. The strategy was to keep Jayadratha at the very end of the army. He was the last person. And they always kept Arjuna on this end of the army. And he said the distance between the two was 12 miles. So in a span of the day, Arjuna had to fight through 12 miles of warriors to get to Jayadratha. And the 12 miles was not just a ride like we came from Chicago. There was Bhishma, Drona, Karna, all these great personalities waiting to fight with him, to challenge him. So when he sees these armies, first is, I don't want to fight them. Arjuna Vishada Yoga. It's Arjuna's bewilderment. It's very interesting that Arjuna gets bewildered at that moment. Of course, we understand that it's a transcendental arrangement. Jai Shri Shri Radha Damodar Ki Jai. We understand that it is an arrangement of Krishna to bewilder Arjuna to be able to deliver the Bhagavad Gita. Because just few days prior, a few months prior to this situation, Arjuna had single-handedly defeated the entire Kaurava army. When he was Brihannala in the palace of Maharaj Virat, he had single-handedly defeated the whole Kaurava army. So to face them back again is not a big deal. But when he looks at them, he's like, there is my grandfather, my uncles, my brothers, my friends, my sons, nephews, all these people. I cannot fight them. And the whole of the first chapter are Arjuna's reasons to not fight. So look at it, let's look at it from Krishna's perspective. Krishna very patiently just sat there listening to Arjuna. In between asked a question, Kutastva Krishna Lamadam. Where is this coming from? But Arjuna just went on and on and on of why he does not want to fight. In fact, in the second chapter, before he comes to Karpanya Dosha Kahata, the previous verse is, Na yotse iti Govinda. He says, I will not fight, Krishna. Na yotse, I will not fight. And the only reaction from Krishna during all of the time is Prahasaniva, this with a slight smile. He hasn't said anything, he hasn't opposed it, he's just smiling. Krishna is giving Arjuna the opportunity to express himself. And then Arjuna says, can you please tell me? I have given you all my reasons why I don't want to fight. In fact, he also asked Krishna in the first chapter, why are you making me do this? This is sinful. Why are you making me do something sinful? From there he comes to, can you please tell me what is good for me? Because despite all the wonderful reasons I have given you, I realize that I am overcome by miserly weakness. That means I am not able to put my intelligence to its proper use. Karpanya dosha. So I am asking you, can you please tell me what is really good for me? Yes, Shreyasyam. What is my ultimate benefit? I am looking at other benefits here. I will win the kingdom, or I might not win the kingdom. What's the use of this kingdom? I might as well beg. So I'm not looking for material benefits. I'm looking for the subtler benefits. I don't need this kingdom. Or I might win this kingdom. I'm also looking at all the consequences of the war. And so there are five reasons that I'm not going through all that. But you tell me what is actually, ultimately beneficial for me. And that too, nishchitam bruhi. Tell me definitively. Because I know from yourself there's no ambiguity, nothing vague. Tell me for sure. Shishya steham. I'm willing to be disciplined by you. Disciplined by you. So side note is that he is allowing Krishna to mold his consciousness by Krishna's instructions. And that's when Krishna begins his side, his pictures, to why he wants Arjuna to fight this war. Of course, he begins with Ashocha Manvashochaskva, Pragyavadam Shabhashasa. So Krishna is showing us that in an exchange, in a relationship, first understand. Another pastime. This is from Ramayana. So we know this story. This is my son's, one of his favorite pastimes. Because in this pastime there's a lot of fighting and he likes it. It's the story of Vali and Sugriva. So Vali and Sugriva were very, very close brothers. So close that everybody would sing the glories of their friendship and their brotherhood. And Vali was the king of the Vanara kingdom. One day a demon, Mayavi, came to challenge Vali. And he came at night when Vali was resting. There's another demon, Dundubi. He also came. If I have time, I'll narrate Dundubi past time. This is funny. But anyway. So, Mayavi came to challenge Vali. That let's fight and let's decide who's stronger. And for Vali, he doesn't like these kinds of challenges. It's just, he likes to be known to be the stronger or the strongest. So Vali just got off his bed, picked up his gada and ran after Mayavi. And Mayavi gave him a chase. Actually, Mayavi ran and Vali gave him a chase. And Sugriva went along. And while they were chasing Mayavi, Mayavi suddenly entered the ground and vanished into the ground. And Vali also went in. But he asked Sugriva, stand here and guard this hole here. And I will chase after Mayavi. And they were gone. And Sugriva just waited and waited and waited. He waited for a year actually. Then suddenly there was this gush of blood from the hole. And he heard these loud cries of the Mayavi demon. Ah! But he didn't hear Vali's voice. So Sugriva became perturbed. Oh, after a whole year of fighting, Mayavi has somehow hurt my brother. He's killed, perhaps killed him. All this blood is gushing out. He's going to come out and fight me. I'm not strong as Vali. He's going to come and challenge the entire Vanara kingdom and our kingdom is going to go away. What can I do? He takes this big boulder and closes the hole. Mayavi can never come out of it. Goes back to the Vanara ministers and narrates what happened. So they all get together and say, no, we cannot not have a king. We should have a king. And if Vali is dead, Sugriva, you're the next the most qualified person to take the throne. You must be the king. Are you sure? Yes, yes, we think you should. All right. And he becomes king. But what actually has transpired is that Vali and Mayavi have been fighting and fighting and fighting, and finally Vali killed Mayavi. And that yelling and shouting was Mayavi's voice, the shriek of death. And all that blood gushing out was Mayavi's blood. So when Vali comes back to the mouth of the hole, there is this big, gigantic rock, boulder, that's close to the hole. So he works very hard to push it out, and he finds his brother missing. Sugriva is not there anymore. So Vali becomes very angry. How dare my brother do something like this. Not only has he gone away, he has also closed this hole that I may never come out. So he went to challenge Sugriva in anger. So when he comes back to his kingdom, what does he notice? Sugriva sitting on the throne. Oh, Vali became so angry. And he challenges by chastise Sugriva. You're such a rascal. You left me there. You closed the hole so I may never come out. This is all a plot to kill me so you can sit on the throne. And Sugriva tries to explain, that's not the case. Here's, don't talk. Don't offer any defense. I know what's going on in your mind. And I know what you have done. I have all the evidences of what you have done. You perpetrated all these things simply to see me dead so you can be the king. No, don't talk! I'm going to challenge you to battle. If you want to sit on the throne, then claim it rightfully. Fight with me. And they both fight and Sugriva gets beat up like anything. And he runs away. Sugriva actually flees to the Rishyamukha mountain. It's called the Kishkinda. And in that is the Rishyamukha mountain. And he knows Vali cannot come to Rishyamukha mountain because Vali has been cursed by a sage. That curse came from the Dundubi pastime. Anyway, no Dundubi pastime right now. But he knows that Vali cannot come to Rishyamukha. And so he, with a few of his loyal friends and ministers, makes Kishkinda his place of residence. And it just so happens that Lord Ramachandra and Lakshmana, passing through Kishkinda forest, come to Rishyamukha mountain, where they meet Hanuman in disguise. So So anyway, back to Vali and Sugriva pastime. Vali did not give Sugriva the opportunity to explain himself, because Vali picked all the indications of events and was convinced of the reality that his mind presented to him. That your brother was just waiting for you to leave the throne so he can sit on it. And just in case if you were going to come back, he sealed that also. And Vali didn't. So, two scenarios that we talked about where all opportunity was given to the other person to express themselves. And one scenario where that opportunity was not given. And so you see the consequences. In the first two scenarios, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became the closest of associates. Very, very deep friendship and relationship between the two. Between Arjuna and Krishna, of course, we know. Their friendship and their very deep relationship. And in this case, the third case, between Vali and Sugriva, was a complete breakdown of their relationship. So, now coming to our situation, it so happens every time, many times, that in our relationships, there are situations where we tend to interpret the other side's actions. And we come up with this whole sense of reality of this is why they're doing, that's why they said this, this is what they've, etc., etc. And then we come up with our own story of what that reality is, when the actual may be quite different from that. And because we assume so many things, so we recently heard it a few days ago, I heard it, or I learnt it the hard way from His Holiness Chandramouli Swami. I was supposed to drive him somewhere, and he said something to me, I understood it something else, and I was supposed to be somewhere at a certain time and I was somewhere else. And so he asked me, what happened, Nityananda Pran, why were you not there? I said, Maharaj, you said like this, so I just assumed, and before I could complete the sentence he asked me, you know the spelling of assume? And I didn't know the joke. Now we all know this, so we're laughing. I said, A-S-S-U-M-E. He says, when you assume, you make an ass, A-S-S, out of you and me. So assumptions and interpretations on, you know, just the way things are happening, and then we build a whole reality around it. And we're very convinced. Right? This is one of the four defects of the conditioned soul. Limited senses can make mistakes. Usually does not, but can. Can make a mistake. Subject to illusion and a cheating propensity. The cheating propensity that I am convinced this is the truth, this is how it is. And so, whenever there is a friendship or whatever relationship, then all of this comes into play. And this comes into play in every relationship. One devotee with another devotee, one devotee husband with his devotee wife, right? Spiritual master, disciple, mostly from the disciple side. Because guru is not an illusion. But from the disciple side, this whole understanding of today Guru Maharaj did not smile at me, I must have offended him. Guru Maharaj may not even be the case at all. or something, all varieties of interpretations that come because we looked at something in a particular way. So when it comes to some situation where we're trying to talk to other devotees, one of the golden rules, I'm not saying or I'm not claiming that the whole relationship is based on just this one golden rule. It doesn't matter whether you chant nicely or not, it doesn't matter, all that doesn't matter. If you can just try to understand the other side first, then you'll have a fantastic relationship. Not true. Although it's very helpful. More important is, of course, our own Krishna consciousness, all of that. This is just one of the things which is important. That rather than build our own story, better to ask, better to clarify. I see it this way. Can you please tell me your side of things? Can I please understand how you are seeing things? It is not to deny how we see things. It's not to deny that, but it is to appreciate how someone else might be seeing things. There are many possibilities in a situation. One is, which I like, I am right, you are wrong. Another is, I am wrong, you are right. Which usually doesn't happen, but I am wrong, you are right. And the other is, both are wrong, or both are right. And both are right is very much possible. I'll digress for a little bit, and pick the pastime in the 7th chapter of the 1st canto. It's called Son of Drona Punished. The scene is that Ashwatthama has released the Brahmastra by chanting this mantra that releases the Brahmastra, and the target is a Pandava, means let there be no Pandava left anymore. And when this Brahmastra is released, at the same time Ashwatthama in the dead of night goes into the tent where Draupadi's 5 sons are sleeping, young boys, and cuts their heads off. And then he realizes, whoa, I've cut off the heads of the sons of Draupadi, and Arjuna is not going to spare me, the Pandavas are not going to spare me. And so he flees. And as soon as Arjuna comes to know that this is the work of Ashwatthama, with Krishna, he chases. Ashwatthama catches up. There's a whole description of it. Horses became thirsty, tired and all that. And anyway, Arjuna captures. He also promises Draupadi, I will bring the perpetrator here. I'll cut off his head so you can stand on his head and offer oblations to your dead sons. That's a Kshatriya promise. And when he captures Ashwatthama, brings him into the tent where Draupadi is there, draws his sword and is ready to cut off his head, looks at Krishna. And Krishna says, according to scriptural injunctions, it's not wrong if you do this. Because although he is Brahmana, he has not acted as a Brahmana. So you're not doing Brahmahatya. So you will not be culpable. Oh, thank you, Guru Maharaj. Draupadi comes running. Muchatam, muchatam. Release him, please. And she says, I can understand the pain. Droni, that is Drona's wife, will go through. Because I am now suffering the loss of a son, the loss of my 5 sons. And I am about to allow the same to be perpetrated. I don't want that mother's heart to be hurt. Let him go. Turns his head. And there's Bhima. Kill him. Kill him right now. 2:1. And then Yudhishthir Maharaj comes and says, forgiveness is a very nice principle. What to do? And it shows Arjuna's spiritual acumen at that moment. Of course, we know the story. He cuts off the jewel from his head, insults him and lets him go, because the insult is worse than death. Perfect execution of duty. He did what was necessary for Draupadi. He also did what was necessary according to religious principles. I forgot why I came to this story. And seeing if you all pay attention.
Is it because he listened to what they had?
Both can be right, wrong.
Correct. The situation where there can be two rights. And they can be very contradictory to each other, and both can be very right. If both are very wrong, well, that's fine. So to resolve situations like these, it's always important to give the other person what's called the benefit of doubt. This is another aspect of it. But first, when there is something that is not clear between two of us, or some of us and some of them, then it's first to know what is their viewpoint. How are they seeing things? And from a scriptural point of view, evaluate what they're seeing. Does that make sense? And from our side, how are we seeing things? This is connected a little to the unity and diversity that we talked yesterday. That two perspectives can exist, and both of them can be for pleasing Krishna. So it's important to understand, to ask, get clarification, seek out how the other party is looking at things. Before I jump in with, here's why I'm seeing things my way and this is right. Now whatever you say, evaluate it against what I think and we'll find out if it is right or wrong. Mostly wrong. Another is, before we get that clarification, there is something in between which we call giving the benefit of doubt. Giving it the benefit of doubt means, a common way of, a simpler way of saying this, Shishirada Damodar Kija. Generally, the dharmic principle or rule is that a person is innocent until proven guilty. But the commonplace principle is that the person is guilty until proven innocent. Because the first thing that, as soon as the situation happens, is that we assign guilt, blame, everything to the person, and then the onus is on them to prove their innocence. Usually, it's the onus on the plaintiff's side to prove the guilt. But giving benefit of doubt means first assume that they're not wrong. First assume that they had the best interest at heart. Then go see it from that perspective. Then seek clarification. I saw it this way. Please help me with your perspective. Then it provides a foundation, a basis, on which we can have proper exchanges with each other. Otherwise, even sitting down together and chanting would be very difficult. Sitting down and, let's say, playing Kartal with Jai Jagannath Prabhu when he's singing, I'm just picking on you because we are friends and I can pick on you and you can pick on me. Jai Jagannath Prabhu is singing kirtan and someone's playing karta or someone, and he may look at someone like this. Why is he looking at me? What does he mean? I can't sing in tune? Well, whatever, what's wrong? It may just be a glance or nothing else, or nothing else. Who knows? For example. Or something, you know, some other situation, someone said something, or they didn't, we hear something and say, oh, they said like that about me. Yeah, they're always like that. So many different scenarios. A spoke to B, B spoke to C, C never spoke again to A. You see? Because C just was convinced by B that how dare A speak like that. Like that, etc. So, seek clarification. Seek to understand the other perspective. Before being very emphatic about convincing the other party, about, here's why I'm singing, this is how it should be. I don't care how you think. Then in an environment where we want to develop nice relationships, it becomes very difficult. The other person never feels understood, the other person never feels heard, other person never feels validated. More important, other person never feels seen in the relationship. Like, I don't exist for this person. And as Vaishnavas, we don't want others to feel like that. I'm anticipating question. Unknowingly, what happens, you know, I may not intend it that way, but people may feel like this. So, well, unless someone brings, then, so let's say I am in a situation where somebody behaved in a particular manner and I am understanding it as, whoa, they just ignored me, something. Then it is my duty to seek clarification. Hare Krishna Prabhu, such and such situation, have I said, done something? No. Okay. Some of the times, the problem is, we don't take the answer that they give. If they say, no, everything's all right. Something they're not telling me. It also happens the other way. We do sometimes, don't tell. Husband and wife situation. Wife is, I like to pick on husbands and wives. A hypothetical scenario, the husband's come back from work or some service, very hungry, and the wife is very upset. She dishes out the prasadam, walks into the kitchen, storms back from the kitchen. Devi, are you upset? I'm not upset. Do I look upset to you? Or the husband, because the husbands also, they're also like that. No, we are also. Angry for something because all the Vaishnavas were there and the wife did not pay proper respect. After all, I am the husband, you know. Look at scripture. What does scripture say about how to treat the husband? After chanting so many years, still you haven't learnt? Are you angry with me? I'm not angry. I'm just thinking about your upliftment in Krishna consciousness. How you will grow. If we have to preach to everyone and you're lagging behind, how is it possible? This happens. I'm not joking. We're all laughing because many of us are laughing at ourselves. It happens. So it is double-edged. From our side, we need to seek clarification. And on the other side, if we are being asked for clarification, that we say what we mean. And when we say what we mean, we say what we feel, not what we interpret, what's going on in that person's mind. You say how we feel. I felt hurt, I felt ignored, I felt something. Whatever we feel. Because that is our responsibility and that's only our jurisdiction. We cannot change a little bit into anyone else. We don't have that potency. So, an interaction of this nature can foster better relationships. Minimally, it can remove misunderstandings on which you can build a good relationship. Because ultimately, we want to build this fantastic vision of an expanded network of loving relationships. But the foundation that we are digging, if it's shallow, then the superstructure will not stand. Foundation needs to be strong. And the foundation is, of course, our own Krishna consciousness. Because a community is built on the strength of its members. In Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna talks about the parampara system, and he says, now this parampara has been broken, yoga nashta. We understand that yoga nashta happens like in a chain breaks at its weakest link. So any member of the community, wherever that weakness is, to that, that's the strength of the community. So, to build a strong foundation is essential. Then the sharing and spreading of Krishna consciousness, all of that will have wonderful fruits to bear. So that's my presentation. I'd like to open for some discussion, comments, if you'd like to share some of your experiences. I've been holding for the past, 45 minutes, bad news. You're laughing at bad news? The bad news is prasadam is delayed. I thought of saying it first. Then I thought there wouldn't be any audience. Out of selfish considerations, I didn't say it. So now you're stuck here. Of course, you can leave. Prasadam is delayed, so we have a little flexibility. But I also know another trick to make best friends, make good friends, is that you let them go early. Then they also like you very much. Okay, any comments or questions, Ramananda?
As you mentioned, we need clarifications. And after clarification, you suppose that getting answer, everything is fine. And we don't have any problem or anything, everything is resolved.
Right.
And next day, I am hearing something else. Then again, trying to clarification. No, Prabhu, there is no communication, there is nothing, everything is fine. And then third day, completely something different is coming. So how
do we do
that?
So when they say everything is fine, it means that day everything is fine. Joke. If someone says everything is fine, you go by that. Everything is fine.
No, but something is happening behind that.
So then you can ask. So this is called, if you want modern language is called mirroring. Or you don't have to get all bent out of shape because someone said everything is fine and they're behaving like not fine. Then all you can say is, I heard you say everything is fine and I see this behavior, this speech. Can you help me understand this? That's all. You don't have to get involved. Just hold it for them to see. Sometimes we can't see. You know, after having, palak paneer. Spinach is stuck in our teeth. And when we smile, it has we cannot see it. Others may see it. And some people may not tell us. Prabhu might be embarrassed. But our friend will say, hey, get the spinach out. Oh, thank you. So just to let someone know that's there is helpful. So you can say, you say everything is fine and you speak like this or you do like this. Can you help me understand this? Or maybe you're not noticing it. Perhaps you're not aware, or maybe you didn't notice, or maybe you noticed, but this is what I'm seeing. No, everything is fine. Then you just go, everything is fine. Even if you know something may not be fine, you leave it for what we hear as the Krishna factor. Let Krishna take care of it. Maybe Krishna is teaching me to just be more patient. So let me, at least minimally, and every one of us can agree that in the department of patience, we can become a little bit more patient. So I'll try to be. Unless it's a life and death situation, we can manage. Atulya had a question.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for very talking about this class. There are multiple Goswami manners studying between different Goswami sections. So I want to ask, like, sometimes there are some personalities who even by themselves say that I know better than you what is good for you.
Yeah, they're called husbands. So, not in your case.
So in general, like personalities who tend to be bigger than you or have a controllership, they very strongly and persistently. So what is, like how to deal with that? Like how to... like from my side, the endeavor to put Krishna in the center and said, oh, that, like that person being a controller or me being a controller, like Krishna being a controller. So it becomes very difficult to navigate through like that force, that energy or that person that is coming into
communication. So there are many things you can do. One is don't try to navigate that and find some other path. That's one possibility. Another is, you don't have to make that controller aware that they are the controllers. It may not be our service. Or, even a higher principle as we've been hearing, is consider, how can I serve this person? Because, let's say we want to push back that controller energy. Oh, hold on, you're really not the controller. What do you think? You're the controller? Krishna is the controller. How can I serve this person? A very wonderful pastime from Bhagavatam is the Nalakuvera Manigriva situation with Narada Muni. I'm not saying you're Narada Muni, nor am I saying it's that person or persons are Nalakuvera and Manigriva. It's the teaching there. The Narada Muni's consideration is, these people are offending me. Like they're oblivious that I'm standing in front of them. How can I serve them? Serve them means somehow or the other take their attention to Krishna. How do I do that? That consideration actually is like a magic trigger. It opens a realm of consciousness that might otherwise not be available for us. Because it's the satato yuktanam. I've been thinking about this because we've been talking about this. Generally in our case it is yesham yuktanam. Once in a while there is a contact with Krishna. So in that little contact we get a drop of buddhi yogam. So Krishna is saying, satata yuktanam, that they are constantly in connection with me. So, that service attitude that, how can I be of service in this situation to this person, opens up a whole new realm. that we might not have considered. Or we may have considered, how can I serve, But our service is not just to do something for the other person. We've been discussing that service means that there is pleasure of Krishna considered. What is pleasing to Krishna? For example, someone's very, in this case, you know, controller. You can tell them, you're such a controller. That may not be pleasing to Krishna in that situation. I don't know. May not be. But you have to consider, what is pleasing to Krishna? That is what opens the Buddhi Yogam realm for us. And then we're guided to act accordingly. Then the natural question is, but I'm not sure if the guidance is super soul or my mind. Then we can ask someone. I'm thinking like this, this has been a situation, this is how I've been inspired, this is how I've been thinking about this, and I'm getting a prompt like this, does this make sense? And in all of that, we may also learn something, right? I mean, that's the whole idea, right? We may learn that we may have the best of intentions, but we don't know how to say it. That's a good lesson we'll learn. We may also learn a lesson that I know how to say it, I may not have the best of intentions. Whatever, I don't know what could be, but there's a lesson for us as well. Okay? Does that make sense to you? Shruti? Go on. Very sinful?
Very sinful.
Simple.
And you still feel upset. It seems like it's often
Can you speak into the mic and you speak fast? You speak.
So it seems like there's a need from our side that we're looking to that
of right. Correct.
So rather than, so when we keep seeking clarification of that, it doesn't create satisfaction. Because it's like
a okay.
So
it
shouldn't.
Yeah, we're seeking clarification for what reason? We're seeking clarification so we might have a healthy exchange of reminding each other of Krishna. Like this morning's class, Paraspara Anukatham. Right? That is the reason we discuss Krishna Katha. So it's not just a mechanical exercise of seeking clarification. If we become aware that there is a need here, then that's what we work on. And that means strengthen our connection with Krishna. My need is something material. I'm looking for confirmation, affirmation, acceptance from such and such person or persons. When the real relationship is here with Krishna that I need to be really working on, let me focus on that. Things here will... Nilesh Prabhu?
Hare Krishna Guru.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhu, you mentioned the past time that Arjuna has quarreling and he's ready to cut off after a long life. And Lord Krishna and then he made that humor is common to all thank you. So I was wondering if this is a practical like examples where you know you can ask him like a one week and then like you know what would be actually
right. There's a difference between sanctioning of Krishna and will of Krishna. Krishna sanctions is not necessarily what Krishna wills. So the next verse or set of verses describe that Arjuna was being tested by Krishna. It is Krishna's way of glorifying how Arjuna has actually understood Krishna. It's not just, because Krishna did not say, yes, you should kill him, this is my instruction. Krishna said, you will not be wrong if you kill him, this is not acted as a brahmana. But in Arjuna, there are many lessons. One is, Arjuna is just not looking at Guru Maharaj, and the rest of the devotees don't matter. Guru said, cut him off, finish him, done. No more Ashwatthama. But other Vaishnavas are also saying, no, no, don't do this, think of this. He is able to accommodate everyone's perspective. They were all satisfied, okay. So I said, thank you, Guru Maharaj, just for the funny because, it's nothing wrong. So sometimes the spiritual master will sanction. If one is very attached, I want to do this. So, you know, we look what's called rubber stamp guru. We already decide, then we go to guru and we say, I've taken care of everything, please sign the dotted line. And if the guru signs the dotted line, we tell everybody, I got an instruction from my spiritual master, which I'm carrying as my life and soul. I already decided everything. I just wanted him to sign the dotted line. So before signing the dotted line, he will say, have you thought about this? What about this? What about Guru Maharaj? One time Prabhupada also did like that. Someone wanted to, was he wanted to get married or something, right? No. When Prabhupada said, someone asked Prabhupada, rock band, yeah. I want to play music in a rock band and that's how I want to spread Krishna consciousness. And the first Prabhupada said no. Then he came back, this is how I want. Yes. He said, yeah, Prabhupada gave me permission to. So the other devotees asked, why did you say yes? Prabhupada said he would do it anyway. So better to say yes and still keep with him within the realm of the connection with the Guru than to say no and he's still doing it. Divorce, yeah, it's a divorce, not rock band. Anyway, rock band also divorce, okay. I don't know that. But if I am convinced I have to do this, then what to do? I know of a conversation one devotee had with the spiritual master. And this is how the conversation started. Guru Maharaj, I have decided to do such and such. Please bless me. And to do such and such, that decision was, I'm going to move far away from the community of devotees, and this is what's going to happen, all of that. Without a discussion of, you know, here's how I'm thinking, what's really helpful. Yeshvesham nishchutam bruhitan me. That's not there. Yes, Sreyasya. Can you please tell me, Nishchitam Bruhi, can you tell me definitely what should I do for my ultimate benefit? My ultimate benefit is the awakening of my Krishna consciousness. No, Shilpa? By the way, I'm looking at the clock because we do have officially till 1:10. After that is all delayed due to prasadam.
So my question was, sometimes we feel hurt or some kind of a miscomfort.
Okay.
And that's the first reaction and that kind of takes over the whole consciousness.
Correct.
Obscures the vision of the approach.
That's correct.
So I was wondering, how do we react, like in the very first reaction, such that we avoid this type of miscomfort and
Well, if you want a simple, very simple answer is, there is no alternative to being Krishna conscious. That's the simplest answer. The more explained version of it is that our defense mechanism is very active because there is something called false ego. And false ego makes the defense mechanism very, very active. The moment someone says something, we're so quick to defend that. Right? Even if someone glances at us and we defend that, why did you look at me? I was not like that. Because there is false ego operating. So, to become Krishna conscious is the only way where that defense mechanism that the false ego protects, you know, the sense of I am whatever, other than I am a devotee of Krishna, is in Krishna consciousness. So, the pastime of Amrish Maharaj, Durvasa Muni became very upset and he chastised and he plucked his hair and created this fiery demon. And the demon charged towards Amrish Maharaj. It is described, Amrish Maharaj didn't even blink or move. In fact, even his mind did not move. Forget the body, even the mind did not budge an inch from Krishna. It was just like this. Idea is not that we are like Amrish Maharaj, but that's our inspiration. We are also not being threatened by a fiery demon. It may be smaller things, but what's our response? If we can minimally catch ourselves from that defending mentality immediately, and just be open to someone saying something and consider, is there any truth to this? Is there anything I can learn from this? Then we have done, you know, a great deal of work on it. So that's our first. Before we immediately put up all our, you know, defenses, we carry in our backpack, our bead bag, and the red button for the nuclear arms. As soon as someone says something, press it. Who else? Anyone else? We'll ask from the side of Mataji. There's no hand here.
Situations where sometimes we go for some clarification from the other person and we are trying to understand them and we feel that from the other side they are not understanding us. So what do we do because that relationship might be important for us to maintain.
So say, very simply express, I feel I'm not being understood. The problem comes when we assign the fault to someone else. You are not understanding me. Right? Well, like a simple thing is the I statements. We generally say the you statements. You are not understanding me. That means the fault is in that person. When we say I'm not being understood, it opens the possibility that maybe I'm not expressing properly. Maybe I can try something else. I'm not being understood. I don't feel understood. Can I try something else? I'll try something else. But expressing is important. I'm not feeling understood. There is a danger to not expressing. The danger is that we let the other person assume that they have understood us. And we operate on the basis of their assumption. Oh, they think they understand me, but look at all the things they're doing, it doesn't gel with me. So better to stay. Better to state, I'm not feeling understood. And just as we are sincerely working on our Krishna consciousness, the other person will also want to work on, oh, I'm sorry, I did not realize that I was not. Maybe I'm not understanding, can you help? Can you explain it in a different way? Can someone else explain it to me, because if I'm not understanding from you? However, at least it opens the door for communication. That's my point. My point is that the channel for communication must be open. Ramya, Mataji. Hare Krishna.
We have seen that sometimes we are forced to take a diplomatic approach in our relationship rather than a straightforward approach. So what I feel is, if we are more straightforward in our approach, we will be more honest in our relationship.
Correct.
So in that case, what is important? Whether we have to save our relationship without being honest, or we have to be honest in our relationship. So which is more important in that case?
any relationship, if it is not on the foundation of honesty, there is no relationship, minimally. So better to be honest and work with it than to be diplomatic and just assume that everything is all right. You're good, I'm good, like we've been hearing. You're good, I'm good, everything is good. We both live in a dream world, la la la, and everything is fine, everything is fine. The relationship is in a mess. Is everything okay? Oh, okay. Why? The only time when you may have to be diplomatic is if there is a threat to someone's life. If there's no threat, then better to be honest and work it out. In fact, it's better to know that there is a problem in the relationship than to live in denial. Or to live with this nagging feeling that it's not right, it's not right, it's not right. Because that's what's going to occupy our consciousness the whole time. Better that it's obvious. Krishna Leela Mataji gives a reference, like there's an elephant in the room, and no one is talking about the elephant. Everybody knows there's an elephant in the room. You see the elephant?
No, I don't.
Do you? No, I don't. It's right there. So better to be honest. And then work from there. One final something?
Premarasana.
This is like a follow-up like of this question where he said that we acknowledge that let this defensive mechanism just come in the way when we are hurt, when somebody says something. So usually this happens, I observe that there is a mixed feeling that we know that
I don't know how to answer it though.
I think we can understand that the person is intentionally not hurting us, Prabhu, but we are hurt. That is not intention, we know. What were the circumstances that we are here to understand?
Okay.
So there is this feeling that we can say that, okay, we can forgive because that is not intentional. But we are hurt, that is also. So there is a mixed kind of a feeling which goes on for some time and maybe probably over time it just goes away. So is there anything we can do when this thing is happening?
Yeah. Yeah. It's called separating. What the separating is, that I'm clear that that person has not done something intentionally. Then there is hurt here. Like this morning we were hearing, it's called trigger. There is something got triggered. What is it? And it's not necessary that every time we ask what is it, that the trigger is very clear. Okay? So, the best solution is, generally when there is a problem here, we find the solution here. What I've come to understand is, if there's a problem here, you go fix hearing and chanting. You hear something about just pure Krishna Katha. You chant japa, you sing kirtan, and guess what? Some clarity comes here, this gets fixed, there is so much understanding here. Here situation, solution is here. Although our attention is always drawn to that circumstance, it is but natural. This is somehow it's conditioned life, that's what it brings. Especially when it's clear that hey, it's not this other person or persons. Something in me and I don't know. And if we open the, you know, doors of, then we're talking lifetimes of anarthas sitting there and we don't know which one it is. And it's too difficult to go start digging out every little thing from Brahmanda, Brahmite, you know, for so many lifetimes. Fix, or at least said in a different language, look at it from a vantage point of light or knowledge. Because groping in the darkness is not going to bring a solution. Look at it from a point of view of light. Get some light from an enlightened point of view. Okay, thank you all very, very much for your kind patience with me. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.